When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, ICYMI from Melbourne. This is Philip, and I met my beautiful French partner, Julien, on the website Couchsurfing.
Hi, I'm Rachel Hampton.
And I'm Candace Lim, and you're listening to ICYMI.
In case you missed it.
Slate's podcast about internet culture.
And today we're talking about love. I know. Absolutely shocking that two Pisces are talking about love. Have we mentioned the fact that you're also a Pisces yet on the show, Candace?
I don't think so.
It's stunning because not only was Madison also a Pisces, but our producer, Sierra, is also a Pisces. Like, this is a Pisces pod. We are full of feelings.
Rachel, you and me, we are here today because we are talking about love, specifically queer love.
In case you missed it, Candace and I are, I think, to both of our deep regret, both cishet women.
Yeah.
But we also love, which is why, if y'all listened to our past few episodes, you heard a little request at the top asking for y'all to send in stories of how y'all, our queer listeners, found love on the internet, and so many of you responded and sent in such lovely voice memos that warmed my little heart. Like, just imagine my hands clasped over my heart, because that is basically how I've been since y'all started sending in these voice memos.
Yeah, I mean, it's swoon eyes emoji, and you know, we're coming to you guys at the end of Pride Month because we wanted to end this wonderful celebratory month on a lighter, happier note. You know, it's been a tough year. It's been a tough few years for the queer community. Anti-trans and LGBTQ plus legislation is constantly being passed, rejected, debated, and a lot of it can be really hard to absorb or think about. So today, we just really wanted to focus on joy. We wanted to focus on the great things that can come from this community. And one of those things is finding each other.
Yes. So we're going to start today's episode with a voice memo that we got. It came in right under the wire. And I'm so glad it did. I'm obsessed with all these stories, to be clear. But this one, I think, really demonstrates the way that the internet allows us to make connections in the most unexpected of places. So without further ado, here's Jody.
Back in 2002, my mom and a stranger on the internet met on a fan fiction site for Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which was definitely like the most lesbian show at the time. They were both in heterosexual marriages, and my mom had three kids. And my stepmom just moved from like 2,000 miles away to be with her. They left their husbands and they've been together ever since. The day that gay marriage became federally legal, they went to Washington, D.C. and eloped and got married underneath a rainbow umbrella. And they are the cutest fucking couple in the world. And I love them so much.
Oh my God, that was so cute. I loved it. Made my heart soar.
Truly, I'm heart eyes emoji. What a high note to start on. And the thing is, we've got so many more stories to share. When we come back, we're going to be talking to one of our listeners who sent us a voice note about how they fell in love on Craigslist. But first, we're going to take a quick break.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
And we're back. Like we said before the break, we'll be talking with one of our listeners who sent us a voice memo. But before we bring them on, here's a bit of the voice note that immediately made everyone on the ICYMI team just start giggling and kicking their feet.
Hey, ICYMI. Y'all asked for stories about queer love from the internet, so I'm here to tell you about how I met my partner because of Craigslist misconnections. So back in 2018, I went to a square dance. I danced one dance with a really cute banjo player who I clocked as queer. But before I could get their number, they had disappeared for the evening. They'd already gone home. So a couple weeks later, I was feeling sad about my misconnection, and I decided to put up an ad on Craigslist in hopes that they might see it and get in touch with me so we could, you know, play music together or something. I was ready to take the ad down after about a week. I had gotten a couple of unsolicited dick pics, and that was about it. And then my banjo babe responded.
And Mika graciously agreed to come on the show. So they're here with us now. They're calling in from Portland, Oregon. Mika, please tell us how you found love on the internet with a square dance.
This was in 2018. I was at an old time music festival. I play fiddle, and I spotted this really cute person who I clocked as queer from like across the room while I was jamming. And I was like, that person is queer. And there aren't a lot of people under the age of like 50 at these festivals, and there definitely aren't a lot of people who like read as queer. So I instantly clocked them. And later that night, they asked me to dance at the square dance. We had one really great dance. And then I, you know, turned around, talked to some friends, turned back around, and they were gone. And I was like, oh no, I really meant to get this person's number and I didn't. And I couldn't tell what they said their name was, so I just felt totally doomed. But a couple weeks later, I'd been thinking about it, and I was a little tipsy at a dinner party, and I was like, I'm going to write a misconnection and post it on Craigslist and see if they respond. So I wrote a misconnection on Craigslist. And at this time, Craigslist had like personals sections, so I had to go in and put in a misconnection, and I titled it Banjo Babe.
Do you remember exactly what your Craigslist ad said specifically?
I took a screenshot. I can read it to you if you would like. It was Saturday night at the Portland Old Time Music Gathering. I spotted you with your banjo from behind my fiddle at a jam. You were so cute. I was so happy when you asked me my partner when the square dance started later. I had mismatched shoelaces and two left feet, but we had so much fun. I adored your seam ripper tattoo, but didn't get a chance to say so. I didn't catch your number, and then you were gone. It is a far-out chance, but give me a call, and we can jam. And in the style of a Craigslist misconnection, there are a lot of ellipses in here, I will say. I don't know. Somehow it seems like a part of the genre. I just posted that to the web and thought, I'm going to be, you know, letting this out of my heart now. It's out there. And if they find it, they find it. And if not, I guess it wasn't meant to be. And I let it sit for like a week. I got a couple of responses, but they were both like people sending me dick pics. That was just totally unsolicited. So I was confused and just like, ah, this is not working. I was kind of getting ready to take it down. And then I got a response from them. And they emailed me and they said, I found your misconnection. And I basically screamed. And we started texting and we decided to meet up again for another date. We went to a square dance, of course, as our first date. And in my misconnection, I'd said, oh, like maybe we can get together and play music sometime, because we both played music and I thought that was a good lead in. So our second date, we actually did try and play music, and they kept like putting their banjo down to like make out. And I kept like, when they would do that, I would just pick up my fiddle and be like, okay, let's play another tune. So eventually we got there and realized we were on the same page, and the rest is history. We've been together since then. We live together and we have a really cute dog. That's the story.
So we are two Pisces. And I don't know if you can tell, but I'm screaming, crying, throwing up because it's truly the cutest story. I am obsessed with every single detail of it. How do you think the internet specifically helped you as a queer person find love? Like, do you feel like this could have happened in any other way? If you just kept going back to the old time music festival, or were just like, there's a banjo player somewhere in Portland, Oregon.
Totally. I think the internet definitely helped. I had a backup plan. It was a backup plan where I knew that they had come to the festival with a person who I like knew, but who didn't know who I was. Like, we'd been introduced to each other a couple of times and she still didn't know who I was. So I was like, okay, at worst, I can like try and get in touch with this person, Melissa, and maybe Melissa knows this person. But it felt like too awkward to do that. And I didn't know how to broach dating in this space I was in that was all about playing music. And, you know, it wasn't like a dating space. So it felt kind of like easier to post a misconnection and hope they found it than to be like, I'm going to rope this third party in who's like an older straight lady to like try and help me find this person. So I think having Craigslist in that space was like really important. And partially because my partner really likes Craigslist. And so they were on Craigslist for the human interest. Like, they loved going through the like posts and like reading. Like, I posted in the Women for Women section of Misconnection because I wasn't totally sure. And like, you know, it was pretty binary. And those posts were like such a rich text of like lesbian longing. It was like, oh, Ashley, I know you said never to get in touch with you, but I still love you, Jessica, you know, like, like, give me a call. And it's just like longing with like no outlet. And so I think if that space hadn't been there and been drawing their eye in already, they never would have found my ad. Like, I think in the current day and age, the personals and the misconnections on Craigslist just aren't the same anymore. Now that all of those lesbian longing posts are mixed in with all the regular straight people posts.
I really do love that, the way that you had this technically kind of bridge person you could have asked, but Craigslist misconnections felt like both safer and almost more direct in a way than this kind of Hinge character.
Yeah, and I didn't want to deal with any of her potential judgments or thoughts about the situation or, you know, what she thought, you know, if she thought this person was available or not. So it was uninhibited in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we are talking about 2018. And something that really stood out to us from your voice memo is you talked about how literally like less than 2 months later, Congress passed FOSTA, which stands for Fight Online Sex Trafficking Act. It's meant to crack down on sex trafficking of children online. But because of the act, Craigslist, they took down their personal section and they wrote this line which said, to the millions of spouses, partners and couples who met through Craigslist, we wish you every happiness, exclamation mark. However, they also were like, this is over. I just wanted to ask about your thoughts, because it's kind of cosmic and it's kind of magical, but interesting that you really got in there before all of this went down.
I love this story for me because it's a story of like hopefulness, and it's a story about how wholesome Craigslist can be, because I think Craigslist by and large is a very wholesome place. It is really a place where lots of people who are pretty offline get online. My partner does not have any social media, but they browse Craigslist every day. And we love trading back and forth like funny Craigslist posts that people put. And you just get a little slice of people's life through how they post on this very open-ended forum space. I think that people often associated the personal section of Craigslist with grimy hookups or with sex work. And I think sex work probably was being facilitated through Craigslist personals at time. I'm not familiar with that personally. But at the same time, I think a lot of other things were getting facilitated, and it kind of got lost in the all the SESTA FOSTA stuff, like all of that other stuff happening and just like the ephemera of human life was just kind of lost in that.
Now that Craigslist personals and missing connections is kind of gone, what advice do you have for finding love online or offline in the modern era?
I love love. I love crushes. I love this question because I have a lot of hope about dating and finding connection and finding connection online and offline. I think a lot of people feel like they have to be on apps in order to date. And I think there's a lot of other ways to meet people and date. Like sometimes you have to kind of put things out hopefully. Like I put this ad out kind of hopefully, like I kind of hope that somebody sees this, but also kind of a release to the universe. Maybe I'll just let go of this longing now. I think it's worthwhile to put that hopefulness out there and to try and make connection. I know it sounds silly, but I think sometimes we get stuck on like, is it going to work? And this might not have worked. This totally might not have worked, but I'm really happy I wrote it. And it's really fun to read back on it and like remember the feeling of this mystery person and like how little I knew about them and how excited I was by the possibility that they were going to find this connection again. And it's been cool to see how other missed connection spaces have opened up since then. Like there was a missed connections page on Instagram for queer people that like really blew up right after this as well. And it was really fun to read all these other missed connections and to see people putting that hopefulness out into the world. I don't know how many of them hooked up in the end, but I think it's delightful. I delight in it, and I delight in like hearing about people's longing and their desire for connection, whether it results in anything or not. But I do think it has to start out being put out there in order for it to potentially build a connection.
Oh, Rachel, do we love Mika or what?
Definitely we love Mika so much. We did want to quickly take a moment to talk about something Mika said, which is about Craigslist personals sometimes facilitating sex work. In fact, I'd probably say Craigslist personals facilitated a lot of sex work. I, in fact, would feel pretty comfortable arguing that people seeking out non-sexual relationships on Craigslist were probably the minority. Obviously, we are a pro-sex work podcast. Keep it consensual and safe, and that's really all you need. But we did just want to clarify that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a really great point. And now back to the stories you all sent in, which only get better. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk to one more listener who went on a pretty magical Minecraft date that will probably make you swoon.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Hey, listeners, whether you love true crime or comedies, celebrity interviews, news, or even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance, too. Enter the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. The Name Your Price tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance. Then they'll show you a variety of coverages that fit within your budget, giving you options. Now, that's something you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose the best option for you fast. It's just one of the many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at progressive.com to try the Name Your Price tool for yourself and join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
Coming soon from Slate Podcasts.
So, first it was Dade County.
Voters in the Miami area repealed civil rights for gay people by a 2-to-1 margin.
In the late 1970s, cities around the country began rolling back anti-discrimination laws that protected gay people.
And then it was Wichita, St. Paul, Eugene.
Successful campaigns against the gay community, which shocked us all.
A state senator from California watched the laws fall. and saw an opportunity.
Homosexuality is a most repulsive lifestyle.
His name was John Briggs, and he wanted to deliver the anti-gay movement its biggest prize yet.
California realized that they were coming for us.
I'm Christina Cotterucci. This season on Slow Burn, we'll explore how a nationwide backlash against gays and lesbians led to a massive showdown in California.
Now it's something called Proposition 6, the Briggs Initiative.
It would call for firing any teachers in California who practice homosexuality.
Your life as you knew it would be destroyed.
We've got to fight back. We can't let this happen in California.
The Briggs Initiative would be the first statewide vote on gay rights. Gay rights now! Gay rights! With so much at stake, young people became activists.
We were all coming out all day long, every day.
And activists became leaders.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you.
Slow Burn, Season 9, Gays Against Briggs. Out May 22nd, wherever you listen.
If we lose here, it'll be 50 years before we ever get back up again.
Like the drag queens say, take out the earrings, sharpen the nails, there ain't no going back.
Hey there. If you love our podcast, then maybe you should consider subscribing to Slate Plus. With Slate Plus, there are no ads on any Slate podcasts, and Slate Plus helps keep this podcast going because this show would not be possible without your support. With Slate Plus, you'll get bonus segments and episodes for shows like Slow Bird, Culture Gap Fest, and Slate Money. You'll also never hit a paywall on the Slate website, meaning you get access to every article and every advice column. Just visit slate.com/ICYMI+ to sign up. That's slate.com/ICYMI+.
And we're back with another great listener whose voice memo has been living in my head rent-free since the day I heard it. Let's hear a little bit of it.
Hi, ICYMI. My name is Jess, and I'm from New Jersey. My queer internet love story took place during COVID, so we met on Tinder, but we couldn't hang out in person, obviously. Because of COVID, we decided to have our first date on Minecraft, and she honestly blew me away. She built us this beautiful cabin in a flower field, and she put roses and lilacs all over the outside of it. And one night in Minecraft, this is still our first date, but it had been a couple Minecraft days, she asked if I wanted to put our beds together, and obviously I said yes. After COVID, we got to hang out in person, and she was really awesome. She was a really cool girl. But also in typical queer fashion, she joined the Coast Guard and got deployed to Antarctica.
If that doesn't make you smile, then I don't know how to help you. Except I do, because we brought Jess into the virtual studio to tell us more about her virtual date. Jess lives in Phoenix, Arizona, and her love story actually starts in what I would say is a dark place, on Tinder. Let's see how she made it better.
During COVID, I was on Tinder, as I guess probably all of us were. And I matched with this girl who was really cool. We were texting, we were Snapchatting. And I believe neither of us had really had a queer experience before. So those are always like a big deal. Mm-hmm. So obviously we had to meet. I don't remember which one of us brought it up first, but one of us asked the other out on a Minecraft date, and obviously it was a yes. I was like updating my character and making sure like she was pretty, making sure I had like little pixelated flowers in my hair just to make sure like even if it was virtual, like I was going to make a good impression. I was going to be hot. And it was going to be a good date. So I already had a Minecraft server because I'm gay. So I let her in and we went off to our own little area and started building our house and looking for dogs. Very stereotypical, like moving in together first date. And then at one point after we had built our little house with our flower field and our dogs, one of us asked the other, you know, do you want to move our beds together? And of course we did. So that was our first date. It was very romantic and definitely made us very excited to meet each other in the future.
So was this your first Minecraft date or had you done this before?
This was my first Minecraft date. And I was nervous about it because I was living with my parents at the time who didn't know that I was queer. And I was like, how are we going to work this out? Like, I guess it's pretty easy to act straight over like voice chat. We got on Discord and we planned everything together. And it honestly, like, I feel like it was a really good first date because we see, like, how does the other one handle conflict? How does she handle it when I get scared of the zombies and she has to kill all of them for me? And it really set up the relationship dynamics on day one because we encountered so many obstacles that day.
Like building IKEA furniture on your first date, but like
slightly exactly
less harrowing. You mentioned in your voice note a rose garden. Can you tell me more about that?
I mean, I'm not super competent. I was kind of like the flower picker and the wood chopper in our relationship. So she would tell me, you know, I need this many pieces of wood, and then I would go get them. And I came across a flower field and I picked all the flowers and brought them back to our home. So we had like a little, our house was just the gayest thing ever. It was covered in lilacs and roses. We had these little like flower pots that we put above our bed that we planted like little daisies in. So it was just a very floral and bright and happy house in the middle of COVID, which was a really depressing time. And it was a nice little like spotlight and like thing to be happy about.
Oh, you know, I think I might need your help, Jess, in understanding like how Minecraft works a little bit, because in my head, I'm kind of picturing like Animal Crossing. Is that kind of the feel of how this world works, where you like can travel to other people's places? How does that part, how do you guys connect?
So Minecraft, I guess, is kind of like Animal Crossing if you could die and started with nothing.
Sure.
So there's not really like NPCs the way like in Minecraft there's like other characters who aren't controlled by another player who you can talk to. Minecraft is just you and whoever else you invite into your world. So I invited her into my little world, and there's different environments that you can go explore, but you start with nothing. You know, you have to build the axe to chop down your tree and then turn the tree into planks and turn the planks into a house. So it's a lot of like building things together and trying not to get killed by skeletons and zombies. That's basically the gist of it.
How long did this Minecraft date last, both, I guess, in the real world and also in the Minecraft world?
I had originally opened the server for my younger brother, who was maybe like 7 or 8 at the time. And it was like our thing that my brother and I would play together. And then I told him like, hey, my friend is going to join our server. And it would get to the point where my 8-year-old brother would log on and be like, why are you on Minecraft and I'm not? So the first date was probably a couple hours, probably, I don't know, like 10 Minecraft days. But it was an ongoing situation where like it got to a point where like we would be on Discord with my little brother and we would be like doing missions with him, and she would like build things for him. It was honestly really wholesome.
That's so sweet.
Oh, that's adorable. Okay, so you guys have this beautiful, beautiful life on Minecraft, essentially. Did anything happen after the Minecraft date? Did you guys like meet up in person or anything like that?
Yeah, we did meet up in person. And like I mentioned, I wasn't out to my family yet. So she lived like an hour away. And I told them, my friend is coming over, my friend who I met on Minecraft, which technically wasn't a lie. Minecraft was a better explanation than Tinder. It was and they were fine with that. They were satisfied with that answer. Like, oh yeah, this girl, I met her on Minecraft and she's going to come over. We went to a pond and we found salamanders. It was really idyllic.
So how long were y'all in touch? How did the relationship end up progressing from this, you know, salamander date into where we are now?
So I knew from when I first met her that she wanted to join the Coast Guard. And we're still kind of in touch. Like, we still follow each other on Instagram. It was never really an official relationship, but, you know, we were like each other's first like girl that we were kind of dating. And we hung out until she joined the Coast Guard. She had to go to basic training for, I don't know, maybe that's like 6 or 8 weeks or something. She came back, and then, originally, she had told me that she was being shipped to Seattle or something like that. I don't remember the exact turn of events, but she texted me one day and she was like, hey, I just found out they're shipping me to Antarctica. And I was like, wow, what does that mean? Why is the military in Antarctica? They were transporting scientists. So like the scientists would get on board the ship. And I guess they were researching Antarctica, and my friend's job in the Coast Guard was like maintaining the ships that they were on. And I think it took a month or two just to get to Antarctica. And at that point, we could only communicate by email. I got an email from her November 17th, 2021. Hey, we're in warm waters now, like halfway to Hawaii. I puked a lot, but now I'm feeling good. How are you? And then I answered her back November 22nd. Didn't hear from her again until January 5th. January 5th, she says, "Hey, currently saying hi from Antarctica, currently surrounded by 360 degrees of ice and penguins." And then I wrote back asking her to send pictures. And she said, "Sadly, I don't think I can send any. Our computers can't handle it from this far, I don't think. But you'll see plenty when I'm back around a month and a half from now. My job is shitty, but looking at the bright side, metaphorically and literally, it's 24 hours of constant daylight here and it's freezing."
Oh, my God. I mean, Jess, can I just ask, how did it feel to like get these emails when you got those notifs? How did you feel?
So I will say everybody in my life knew about them. Like I was like, mm-hmm. Oh my God, Anjali just sent me another email. Like everybody was following the Anjali saga. It wasn't just me.
So this was in like 2021, 2022. You said you still follow each other on Instagram. What happened after she came back?
I actually don't think I ever saw her again. We stayed in contact, but this was around the same time I got a job offer to move across the country. So she was in Seattle and then she was in California and I was in Arizona and then she was in Florida. I believe that when she was in Florida, she started dating somebody. So I think she has a girlfriend right now. I also started dating a girl. I can't remember if I started dating this girl while she was in Antarctica or after she got back. Like she definitely wasn't my girlfriend, but I DM'd her today and I was like, "Hey, I just wanted to let you know, this podcast is interviewing me and I'm going to talk about how we went on a date or a couple dates and then you moved to Antarctica." And she was thrilled and she asked me to send
oh
it to
my
her.
God.
Oh, yay.
Yeah, she's literally like the coolest and like most unique person I've ever met. The kind of person that you know and you're like, "Wow, that was an experience spending time with this person."
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. I did want to ask, you know, from just your experience and the story itself, how do you think the internet has helped you as a queer person find love? And like, how has the internet played a part in just your journey and stuff like that?
I wonder sometimes if I had not had the internet, if I ever would have even known that I was gay.
Mm-hmm.
And just having that virtual connection to queer culture has been so important to me because I didn't grow up in like the most rural bumfuck town, but there weren't a lot of lesbians in my school.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just seeing it online and especially seeing like older queer women or like seeing families where there are two moms and realizing like this isn't just like something people do to be quirky. This is like an option that I have in life was so, so important to me because growing up, even if I knew like one or two queer girls who were my age, I never saw like a queer adult ever until I had access to the internet and was like in those spaces. And I think just my understanding of my identity and my ability to accept and embrace my identity have been really important because I don't have the kind of background where that's something that would necessarily be celebrated. And that doesn't bother me as much as it would without the internet because I can contextualize it and say, I live in this part of the country with the kind of people who think this way, but there are a lot of other people who don't think this way. And there are other places where this is a lot more normal. And of course, I'm speaking as a white woman from New Jersey. So I had it better than other people, definitely, but it was still hard just not having those queer influences around me. And it's been so vital to like meeting other queer people and to also just seeing that other queer people exist and are happy.
Seeing those possibilities in front of you are like so important for being able to like project a version of yourself into the future. I wanted to ask, what is your advice for finding love, both online and offline in 2023?
So all of my friends keep swearing off Tinder and saying like, "I hate Tinder so much. It's just full of like fuckboys and like toxic women." But like that's how everybody meets is on Tinder. I have like one partner in my life who I didn't meet on the internet. So my advice is to keep trying and also like raise your standards because my friends will come to me and be like, "Well, you know, this guy told me that I kind of like look like a slut and he thinks that I'm not as hot as his last girlfriend, but you know, I feel like I should give him it." Like, no, you no. Unmatch with them the second that they give you any kind of energy that isn't like respectful and encouraging and kind. Like, you block them. You don't have to keep talking to them. So I think my advice is to expect people to act like people and don't feel unreasonable for that. And to also just not give up, because honestly, I don't know how anybody meets anybody in person anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's great advice because I think it's true. Like, I haven't even met Rachel in person before.
Somehow I had like the deep instinctive desire to be like, that's not true, because it doesn't feel true, even though it very much is. That's wild. But it will be changing soon. Mm-hmm. And I just really appreciate Jess and Mika and all of you wonderful listeners for sending us your love stories. We love hearing them. And unfortunately, we couldn't sidebar with all of you because our show is technically only half an hour. But we're still going to share some of the other voice notes we got, starting with this one.
Hi, ICYMI. I am half of a queer couple. I'm a lesbian woman and my partner is a bisexual woman. And we met on Tinder in January 2015. And basically, I have been on the app for maybe over a year. She had gotten on the app a week before we had matched. And come to find out, not only did she not know that you could meet all kinds of people on the app, no matter your gender expression, she also didn't read the directions, like, at all. So she had no idea how the app worked and that the whole premise was to match with someone. So all she was doing was swiping left if she liked someone and wanted to see more of them, and swiping right if she didn't like them and didn't want to see their profile again. So when we had matched, she was like confused. She didn't know what was happening.
So my internet dating story involves sliding into the DMs of a podcaster after hearing her voice on the radio. A couple months later, flying to her city for a 3-day date, and going on 2 years later, we're still happy and healthy and going strong.
I'm sending a voice note about how I met my now fiance through the internet. We met on Hinge. In that moment during COVID, right when the vaccine was starting to come out, neither of us had gotten it yet. So our first two dates were on FaceTime. And if you're familiar with the Hinge layout, you can answer people's prompts. It's not just liking them. And I had answered the prompt, "I know the best spot in town for," with cheeseburgers. And they responded to that and asked where. And I said, I can't just go giving out that information willy-nilly. And our first FaceTime date, I prompted us to each order our favorite cheeseburgers for delivery and eat them together on FaceTime.
Okay, that's the show. We'll be back in your feed on Saturday, so definitely subscribe. That way, you never miss an episode. Leave us a rating and a review in Apple or Spotify, and tell your friends about us. You can follow us on Twitter at @ICYMI_pod, which is also where you can DM us your questions like, how do I make a rose garden in Minecraft? And you can always drop us a note at icymi@slate.com.
ICYMI is produced by Sierra Spragley-Ricks, Candace Lim, and me, Rachel Hampton. Daisy Rosario is our senior supervising producer, and Alicia Montgomery is Slate's vice president of audio. See you online.
Or in a Minecraft rose garden.
Coming soon from Slate Podcasts.
So, first it was Dade County.
Voters in the Miami area repealed civil rights for gay people by a 2-to-1 margin.
In the late 1970s, cities around the country began rolling back anti-discrimination laws that protected gay people.
And then it was Wichita, St. Paul, Eugene.
Successful campaigns against the gay community, which shocked us all.
A state senator from California watched the laws fall and saw an opportunity.
Homosexuality is a most repulsive lifestyle.
His name was John Briggs, and he wanted to deliver the anti-gay movement its biggest prize yet.
California realized that they were coming for us.
I'm Christina Cotterucci. This season on Slow Burn, we'll explore how a nationwide backlash against gays and lesbians led to a massive showdown in California.
Now it's something called Proposition 6, the Briggs Initiative.
It would call for firing any teachers in California who practice homosexuality.
Your life as you knew it would be destroyed.
We've got to fight back. We can't let this happen in California.
The Briggs Initiative would be the first statewide vote on gay rights.
Gay rights now! Gay rights!
With so much at stake, young people became activists.
We were all coming out all day long, every day.
And activists became leaders.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you.
Slow Burn, Season 9, Gays Against Briggs. Out May 22nd, wherever you listen.
If we lose here, it'll be 50 years before we ever get back up again.
Like the drag queens say, take out the earrings, sharpen the nails, there ain't no going back.